You can tokenize a stock or a bond, but to do it with receivables, it's a bit of a, it's to me, it's the greatest opportunity on blockchain in so many ways, because you wouldn't be able to buy stock in a company that was going to go up if, or that was solvent, let's just say, if they weren't able to get their product.
Welcome back to Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today I'm talking with Billy Siebel from the XDC Network, a blockchain platform revolutionizing trade finance and RWAs, real-world assets. We're exploring his journey from manufacturing and receivable financing to building on XDC, how tokenization unlocks capital for businesses, the impact of the Genius Act on stablecoins, and why private credit on-chain is the next big thing. Billy shares his insights on regulatory clarity and XDC's ecosystem growth. You can check out the XDC network over at xdc.org. It's xraydeltacharlie.org, and you can follow them at xdc_network on Twitter. Grab your passes for the panels, the pitches, the crypto vibes over at bostonblockchainweek.com. Now let's jump in with Billy Siebel. Billy, thanks for taking the time. We got the wires crossed a little bit there. Hopefully you weren't stuck in no man's land there for too long.
Yeah. There's always something interesting with a podcast, right?
You never know. Yeah.
It worked out fine.
At least all this stuff worked when you got in here. That's the stuff that's pain to troubleshoot.
Right.
So we kind of met yesterday and did a little bit of chat talking about what we're going to, like the direction we wanted to go today. And one of the things that kind of surprised me was hearing about your manufacturing background. So I'm like really curious, like how did that background in manufacturing lead you into the blockchain and crypto space? Because it's kind of a different path, I think, than most people take.
Yeah, right. It's really Main Street, not Wall Street, right? Which is right. What you see happening today, all the suits, so to speak. But yeah, it's funny because I guess it's a pretty direct connection in a way.
Yeah.
One being that, you know, I was in manufacturing and, you know, we were buying capital equipment. We had at one time, I guess our peak was about 85 employees in the manufacturing company. And, I got into the capital side of the business, you know, where I was operating and running the business. Mm-hmm. And we were dealing with banks and other lenders looking to bring equipment in and really just dealing with, at certain points, literally receivable financing, which is, you know, what we're really about over here at XDC Network.
Was that before or after the, didn't like Enron lead to a bunch of regulations with like how CapEx programs work now?
Well, yeah, Enron probably, I wouldn't really be able to get into too much familiarity around their markets, but, Enron was a very different market. You know, for us, really, it was more a matter of traditional, I was in an industry, sheet metal fabrication, that was dramatically impacted by 9/11 and the dot-com bust. And so essentially businesses really in the whole region throughout the vertical were having tremendous issues, and a lot of them were just closing down. And, you know, we were in a position where we were acquiring as many of these as we could for as long as we could, and, you know, hoping to survive. And we've seen, you know, that industry in the Northeast be cut by 2/3 within a matter of a few years. It was pretty devastating. We're talking probably like $3.5 billion, $4 billion industry down to about $1 billion to $1.5 billion in a really short period of time. So it was pretty brutal back then. And one of the things that we were doing in order to really survive, you know, the cash flow crunch that we were dealing with was to factor or to, you know, lend against or get lending for our accounts receivable. And so banks had very specific programs in which how they would do receivable financing. And it's tough. You know, I will tell you that in that market, and when you have a bank that's really doing this, it's very onerous in how they do it. And it's an extremely profitable business for them.
Right.
And for you as a business, you know, you're looking at it from, when do those checks come in the mail?
Yeah.
You know, you have payroll to make, you have things that you need to do to operate business, purchase more material, so on and so forth. And you need that working capital. So when I found, you know, I should say after that experience, you know, fast forward a few years, I was now actually consulting you know, businesses like the business I was in. You know, I got out of the business, and from that time, in dealing with the consulting piece, you know, I started to get into blockchain because in between, my schedule is very different. I used to be in the factory, you know, 7 to 5:30, and you know, yep. Here I am now, you know, working a few days a week and doing consulting within somebody else's factory. And so, in between, I was, you know, on the threads and, you know, looking right. into the different projects that were available, and that's where I got into at the time Zinfin, which was okay. what we were called yeah. Zinfin Network at the time. Now we've been XDC Network. You know, since we shifted the name to XDC.
Yeah, so it was a very linear kind of transition then.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Zinfin FinTech launched the chain. Mm-hmm. You know, back in when we went live for mainnet, that was still really Zinfin, who had really been the backbone so much of what we've been doing. And yeah. when I got involved with Zinfin at the time, it was 2021, early 2021. Mm-hmm. And from that time period, you know, there was a decision to launch the foundation. So in launching the foundation, we created a team that was really independent of Zinfin, where we could start to really kind of decentralize the chain and get other entities working to support the network. And so we did a lot of work to really build the ecosystem. Once kind of COVID hit, that was really kind of the transition point for me, where I just decided to go all into the crypto space. And, you know, I kind of say I had been doing a 3-year interview with Zinfin because I was really right. building the community yeah. at that time. Really, you know, many, many hours of the day for many, many days. It was like a full-time job. And so that's really kind of how I ended up, you know, in the position I'm in yeah. ultimately.
Going back to like the process of like turning invoices into like capital.
Yeah.
Like you have a solution to that now with XDC. So like what does that solution look like now for the small bit? Like, so you were in the same position you were now and XDC exists.
Yeah.
What would that look like now trying to fund these projects versus the way it looked then?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good question. Well, you know, this is also a very evolving industry, although slowly I will say, you know, trade. Mm-hmm. Finance is a really kind of an industry unto itself, and when it comes to funding, and you know, they operate very differently than say, I guess maybe a traditional bank would on its own, and in terms of what we're trying to do. So, what would normally happen would you would go to a bank, and a bank would essentially evaluate your receivables and say, okay, based on what you have, here is the program we'll allow you to do. You can, you know, submit a receivable or an invoice at this particular time, and you know, will funds into your account 80% of the value of that invoice, and so then you can take that. We'll hold back 20% in reserve, and ultimately, when we get paid, we would then pay the bank. And so, depending on your circumstances, the bank may say, "Well, we'll give you your 80%, but not your 100%." So, you know, they could do what they wanted. You know, they would just kind of operate because you're only dealing with one particular bank and
it's less competition.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And now I'm in a region where banking is robust, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, people, we can go to a bank, and as a business, somebody may look at us and say, "Hey, you know, we've look at you as a good opportunity for us," because that's what they really do.
Right.
Because banks won't deal with you unless it's a good opportunity for them. And, you know, they will come up with their way of, you know, system that, but there's no going to anybody else. And right, what right. I found, kind of going back to Zinfin, when I found Zinfin, the thing that I found really interesting was that they were really trying to create a solution that was really for everybody, and it didn't matter where you were in the world. Mm-hmm. And for me, I look at a lot of regions that are, they don't have the banking, you know, so they're in regions where they don't have even the opportunities that we had, never mind, you know, like the situations they're currently dealing with. And for us to be able to have a platform that would allow somebody, you know, in Africa or anywhere else in the world to submit an invoice and to be able to, you know, prove what the product is and what they're able to, you know, what they do, and you know, have all of the same kind of visibility that you would have if you were going to a bank, but be very far away. And then to be able to finance that quickly through blockchain, that was an unbelievable solution. And I thought, this is really a great way for banks or non-bank originators, really, is who we deal with, to be able to have that capital that they have available to small businesses across, you know, the world. And so that's really kind of a lot of the core ethos of like who we are,
yeah,
you know, which
yeah.
is really about, we're just trying to make the world a better place through the technology that has been created and the focus that we have had at that time on accounts receivable. And, you know, today everything has turned into tokenization and then RWAs, and, you know, RWAs and tokenization go into a lot of things. You can tokenize a stock or a bond,
mm-hmm.
but to do it with receivables, it's a bit of a, it's to me, it's the greatest opportunity on blockchain in so many ways, because you wouldn't be able to buy stock in a company that was going to go up or that was solvent, let's just say, if they weren't able to get their product from somewhere in the world. And so, like the t-shirt you're wearing and the shirt I'm wearing, like these are the things that are being financed literally. And so really with that, you know, we looked at getting involved with fintech companies that had access to non-bank originators, because banks were not interested in touching blockchain at all. And we looked at how we could turn that into maybe take a grouping of invoices that are submitted and bring it to those non-bank originators. So those originators are then able to fund, you know, the invoices, and they literally then hold and own that product until it's delivered.
Kind of like the way they do like mortgage-backed securities, where they bundle up like groups of different classes and allow you to purchase. I guess, because it allows you to diversify a little bit, right? No, you're less worried about one not paying when you have a group of them bundled.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's really kind of an industry unto itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of behind all of the mortgages that, you know, any one of us may actually get.
So if you're a small business and you're going this route, trying to tokenize your invoices in order to pull capital ahead to fund projects, what sort of rate are you getting, or what sort of rate are you paying for that, like compared to what you would through traditional finance? Are you finding it more competitive because there's more people bidding on that asset?
So you're getting, so when it comes to trade finance and rates, you know, a lot of this is going to be based on risk.
Yes.
So seeing I'm not a risk expert on that, it's hard for me to say you can get this or get that. But really what we focus on, not so much from what's happening on the supply side, but we're looking at taking, you know, those receivables, those assets, and bringing them on chain and making them accessible to others to come in. And so what we would look at.
So you're finding the liquidity.
Yeah, exactly. We're working to bring that liquidity on, and those liquidity providers, you know, we're aiming to get to that, say, 6 to 8% return or on a yield for them. And so, you know, there's going to be, you know, extraction of that, you know, difference, everyone takes their little piece of that out. And
the idea that you have more people competing over limited assets should, in theory, depress the prices, right? You should get a more competitive price.
So it's interesting. So I think what happens, or the focus or goal here, and what we're trying to do ultimately in making, it's like supply and demand, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if there is greater supply of money and they want to lend it out and make money, you know, then it's going to be more beneficial to those looking for the money, and conversely, the opposite, right? And so we see that with rates and rate changes. You know, you see this with the Federal Open Market Committee and what's happening here in the States, and, you know, inflation is this and jobs are that, so let's cut rates. And of course, that trickles down everywhere, including to how much the government pays for their debt.
Yep.
So, you know, there's a lot of things that are intertwined with this. And I think, you know, for us, what we've really tried to look at and focus on is who are the best people that we can work with to make this happen? And, you know, how can we ensure, at least from our standpoint, that we're bringing the technology to them so they can bring their business on chain? And then therefore, you know, ideally, it should help those because there's more supply available.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's supply where there wasn't that capital. So, yeah, so I think these are things to ultimately be proven over time and how the market reacts.
Yeah.
But I'll use a point on something that people are talking about. I think if you've seen recently, JP Morgan and some other banks have come out asking for a change or adjustment in the Genius Act.
Yeah, they're worried about some loopholes there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A loophole where, you know, yield can be offered, where, you know, it would be more competitive than what they're offering. And they're basically saying, if we don't get the deposits, we don't lend the money out. We can't lend the money. And I think, well, okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah, basically, raise your deposit rates.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So you're getting priced out.
Right, go on blockchain, right? Yeah. Do what others are doing, offer in stables. I mean, these are things where they're saying, well, we don't like the fact that somebody could be more competitive than us and then maybe somebody else will loan the money out, right?
Right.
So I find it really interesting. So when I kind of look at what we're doing here, it's interesting, you know, as you develop this, like you find out, well, you know, here are things that people are picking up on or putting out there in public, and you're going, okay, well, does that actually help us or hurt us? And I think, and so far I look at that and I think, well, it doesn't hurt anybody that's building on chain.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So, yeah.
Well, I listened to an episode you did on Block Talks. I think it was about 10 months ago as I was preparing for this. And one of the things you mentioned on there was starting up an accelerator program. And it sounded like you had some success in that from the conversation we had yesterday, seeing how you're getting ready to do a second round of that. But I was curious if you can tell me like how that worked, what sort of things were coming out of that pipeline that's got you excited for the future, anything else about the program that you think is interesting?
Sure. Yeah, actually, it's been, I think, a really exciting program for us. And just a quick background is that, you know, we have always been focused on trade finance and RWAs. And I think I've probably mentioned that, if not that, to some degree. But the idea behind getting involved in this accelerator, which we did with Plug and Play in Silicon Valley, and we're still engaged in, you know, we've done one full round of cohorts and of 10, and we have another, which are now in the process of going through selection.
Nice.
And basically what we really realized was it was an opportunity for us to really build out a ecosystem around real world asset tokenization that allows people to come on chain and really effortlessly bring their products on and really be a hub of activity where liquidity providers are there who can come on and who can actually, you know, supply the capital, and that we have the tokenization platforms that allow for the proper tokenization of assets, and that, you know, then we have non-bank originators or others who are, you know, able to come to the you know, ecosystem and easily take those assets and use the platforms to, you know, be able to bring what they're doing into Web3. And so really what we've done in that first cohort, you know, we had 10 different companies. I'm not sure, I'll probably won't be able to name all of them off the top of my head just from memory. But, you know, we brought in a number of different projects that were part of this, from Clearpool as an example, is one of those projects. You know, we've got Nomix is another tokenization platform that has come in and are building, you know, all of these have done some form of integration. So Nomix is integrated into the platform. We have a company, Blockticity, which is really a kind of an attestation company. So you can actually go to the source and, you know, see from the source exactly what the product that's being shipped is. So whether it's coffee and you want to ensure that when it gets to the grocer that it's actually the organic coffee that they said it is, you know, that can be verified. And so they're doing a number of, you know, different projects across the globe. And it's one of those things in my mind where we're looking at saying, well, if you're going to be doing something on chain, it's not just a matter of saying we can tokenize. We're also going to say, you know, that we want to be able to have people be able to use tools to verify. Yeah. And that's a real important aspect when it comes to people putting money on the table for these, you know, different tokenized assets.
When you say you're building an ecosystem, you really mean it.
Yeah, we do, and including other chains. So Plume Network was part of that. You know, we've been working with them around how to bring more assets on chain. We look at it from a standpoint of working with others in the ecosystem. Like in blockchain itself, you know, we're stronger together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's really what we want to be able to do. And so
it's like you're building the playground for everyone who wants to build the toys. You're just making a place for all of them to come together and have a place to be able to do that.
Exactly. That's the idea. And, you know, we've got from them, Tokeny, Credify, are another example of a couple of others. You know, the list goes on. So it does go on.
I'll tell you, I was clicking through it on your website, which, by the way, the website looks amazing, but there's the show more when you're looking at all the people who were worked with you. And I think I clicked it three times and I wasn't even past the E's yet.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, XDC.org.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great website.
That's a really good looking site too, man. Whoever designed that did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, we had a team internally who was working on that. It was a really big project, but you know, we were really trying to make it really kind of clear about who we are and what we offer, and that, you know, we have a different story to tell.
It's not just that
we really
want
to tell it.
It's the other stuff that's on there too. You got the glossary, which I found extremely helpful listening to that interview that you mentioned, because that was a lot more technical than I'm used to listening to. There's that. There's all sorts of tools. Like if you want to get involved, if you want to develop your own project, there's all these like how-tos on there. Like it looks like the barrier to entry has gotten really low, and you guys have done a phenomenal job, I think, of lowering that bar.
Thanks. Thanks. Well, it's good to know. I mean, we really just want people to come here and build.
Right.
And as a foundation, you know, we just try to support that as best as possible. And, you know, we're kind of like agnostic players in a way. You know, we let people do what they need to do. And, you know, we're open public network, and, you know, anyone can come and build.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we would like it to be people who can come in and build with the ethos that we have. And, you know, that's what we really try to do as much as possible. So that's why those tools are there.
Yeah. Well, I love that, man. Last thing I think I wanted to ask you about then, because we've talked a little bit about the financial side, which is where you spend most of your time. And especially if you're going cross borders throughout the world, like you mentioned, assets in Africa being tokenized. What does that mean? Like, what does the regulations look like for that? Like, how much of a nightmare is it trying to get the regulation side of that straightened out or squared away?
Well, you know, it's definitely a slow road. It's been one of those things. Probably if you've seen other things that I've said, now it's changed a lot here in the U.S., but so much of what was happening in the U.S. with the previous administration was really anti-blockchain. You could say it was anti-crypto, whatever, but you were taking a technology and you were literally chasing people out of the country to go build elsewhere. And so people went to build where they were allowed to do things that they didn't have to worry about a lack of clarity or, you know, something that was punitive.
Right.
And it was always this thing where we could only move as fast as regulations would move. But we looked at it from the standpoint of trying to build or integrate with projects that were platforms that could actually operate in what we felt would be the regulated world. So if you look at what happens right now in regulated markets, traditionally, you know, it's a pretty high bar for what you need to do in terms of disclosures, and, you know, you need to do things properly. We didn't want to get into anything to do around securities without platforms that were able to actually offer them. And so that's why we did things like integrate with Securitize a couple of years ago, where, you know, we looked at it and said, well, if we're going to be able to do stuff in the US, this is the platform you can do it with. And so we were able to offer, you know, through our technology for somebody else to launch, you know, treasury tokens on chain, as an example, through Securitize. And there are other offerings that, you know, they've been setting up to do. And, you know, we'll see. You know, this is one of those things, it's a wait and see. Can they make it happen or not? We provide the technology, and that's really what we try to do.
That's brilliant. So you don't even have to worry about it, really. Let somebody else worry about it.
Yeah.
Just invite them to come play on your network. We'll make it easy for you. You figure it out.
Right. And the reality is it's a slower path to getting to where you want to get to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're not going somewhere where it says, oh, well, we can just do it over here and there's not a lot of, you know, regulatory, oversight going on. So it's easy to do. We're not interested in that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why we've stuck with what we stuck with. And as time has gone on, you've seen, you know, trade finance coming together through efforts at the UN with M-Letter. You know, there's now, you know, you have the MiCA legislation passed in Europe, and you've got the International Chamber of Commerce doing a lot of work around, you know, in the UK, really working with the electronic docs, you know, law that they've passed there that has really changed things quite a bit in the UK, which really was kind of the backbone of a lot of trade. So little by little, things are happening. And now with the Genius Act and what you're seeing here in the US, you know, there are a lot of barriers coming down. So I think we're in a great position to, you know, really build off of that. And, you know, that's really what we've tried to set up from the beginning.
So what are you excited about for the future then? What do you see happening in the next couple of years with XDC and blockchain as a technology?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think there's an aspect, especially with, and this is really because of the Genius Act in many ways, the access to capital on chain is going to increase dramatically, because now you have clarity around what you can do with stablecoins. And stablecoin really is the, you know, ultimate tokenized asset, taking a dollar for a dollar. We have really great stuff happening, you know, coming up shortly with on-ramps onto the network. This is a big component that we've been working towards that's needed for us to really execute long-term on the plans that we're doing. And so what we're going to be seeing happen is that capital now have the flow onto the network the way we've wanted to. And so I think it opens the access to the things that we've been doing. And I think the space in general, RWAs, as we like to call it in crypto, I think is such untapped potential, really, to tokenize so many different assets, whether it's collectibles, like we have Polymarkets, they're one of those projects, you know, from Plug and Play as well. You know, there are all sorts of assets which can come on chain. Ultimately, you know, we may have all of those on chain, but, you know, our main focus really is let's get the private credit going, let's get it accessible to businesses, and, you know, let's launch something that really makes the world go round, literally. And I guess with tariffs, you can use anything today as a tool to make things cheaper. If you have it, you know, then, you know, maybe that's a driver. So I think that's a really exciting, you know, piece for us to see unfold as we move forward.
Well, I'm excited to see. I'll be paying attention to you guys in the future. Are you coming down to Boston? What do you know? What day you're going to be giving your topic or what your presentation will be on?
I'll be talking on the 10th. I think around 2:30. I think something
nice.
Like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you know what the topic will be?
Yeah. So basically about trade finance being the greatest opportunity in tokenization.
Well, I think we just teased that pretty well.
Right. I hope so. So come down and see it, you know. Yeah. It'll be good to be back in Boston.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I hope to see you there, Billy. Thank you so much for your time today. Unless you got anything else you want to say, we can probably wrap up here.
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Kyle. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks.
Big thanks to Billy Seabell for unpacking the trade finance, tokenizations, and XDC's real-world blockchain solutions. You can visit XDC, that's xraydeltacharlie.org, to learn more about XDC Network. You can stay connected over at @XDC_network on Twitter /X. Don't miss Boston Blockchain this September, actually coming up in a couple of days. You can snag your tickets over at bostonblockchainweek.com for the talks, the networks, and that unbeatable crypto energy. Remember to follow the show, share it with your blockchain savvy friends, and we'll catch you all in the next episode.
Produced by China Shop Productions.